Welcome to the Texas Wine Scene Podcast, the most up-to-date information to help you prepare for your wine tasting weekend. I'm Mike, your Texas Wine Scene correspondent, bringing you all the wine happenings in and around the great state of Texas, from the High Plains to the Hill Country. If you love Texas wine, you've come to the right place. Let's take a trip. This Mother's Day, Wedding Oak Winery is turning up the sweetness with an irresistible offer that combines the two things moms love most: delicious wines and great savings. Shower mom with Wedding Oak Winery's Mother's Day special featuring the 2023 Grenache Rosé from the Mirasol Vineyard in Lampasas, Texas, that won the gold medal and was named the Texas Class Champion at the San Antonio Rodeo Wine Competition. The 2024 crisp and refreshing dry white wine made from the Muscat Blanc grape variety from the Phillips Vineyard in Brownfield, Texas. And the 2023 light-bodied Sangiovese, an Italian-style red wine bursting with the aromas of rosemary and red cherries. Shoppers can stop by any one of three Wedding Oak Winery locations, including San Saba, Fredericksburg, and Burnet, Texas, starting May 1st, with the sale ending Sunday, May 11th. You can also purchase this bundle online at WeddingOakWinery.com. So on this special Mother's Day, give her the gift of special wine. That's Wedding Oak Wine. Recently, I had the opportunity to attend the Wedding Oak Wine Train wine tasting event that travels from Cedar Park, Texas, just north of Austin, over to Burnet, Texas. I arrived early at the train depot to pick up my ticket at will call, and while there, I was able to stroll through the train museum and their gift shop to get a bit more information about the train system and its history of railroad transportation here in Texas. I hopped on the Vintage Restored Rail Coach and enjoyed a flight of five Wedding Oak wines during the leisurely two-hour train ride over to Burnet. While in Burnet, I picked up a bottle of the 2023 Wedding Oak Castanet Rosé, which won double gold in the 2025 San Francisco Chronicle Wine Competition, and I was able to catch up with Mr. Mike McHenry, the owner of Wedding Oak Winery, to talk about his winery and the wine train event. I was also able to speak to Mr. John Phelan, the owner of one of the Vintage Rail Coaches, and get some insight into the history, the logistics, and the restoration of the trains used for the Wedding Oak wine tasting event. Take a listen. Welcome back, everyone, to the Texas Wine Scene Podcast. I am your host, your Texas Wine Scene correspondent, Mike Cole, bringing you all the wine happenings in and around the great state of Texas. We are here at Wedding Oak Winery with the Wine Train event that I've mentioned many times on the podcast. For all you listeners out there, you've heard about this event. It's been a fantastic opportunity to be a part of this event today, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first, I want to talk to Mr. Mike McHenry here at Wedding Oak Winery and welcome him to the podcast. Welcome, sir.
Yeah, glad to be here, Mike. Our mothers had great taste in first names.
Yes, sir. That is right. Mr. McHenry, can you tell us a little bit about Wedding Oak Winery and how that all got started for you, sir?
Sure. So I started growing grapes in 2001, small-scale grapes for Alamosa wine cellars, and learned how to grow grapes, at least in that particular time, in Texas. And in doing so, became acquainted with others in the Texas wine industry. And in 2010, it was proposed to me that I might want to invest and buy some buildings in downtown San Saba and put in a winery production facility and tasting room. Okay. And so you know, like anything else, if there's an opportunity, you jump through the door. So I jumped through the door, got some of my friends involved, and we went and built a 10,000 case production facility in San Saba. And so that was in 2012 that we actually opened. So since then, we opened at a location in Fredericksburg and the one we're sitting in today in Burnet.
Okay.
A few years ago, when actually in 2019, I met with the principals at Austin Steam Train and proposed the notion of a wine train, since we already had the destination building here and the train was coming here anyway on multiple occasions. So with their support, of course, we created the wine train.
Yes, sir.
And that first one was in September of 2019. And we've been doing it ever since, other than the period of shutdown due to COVID.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I've been going in and offline trying to book the wine train. It's a very popular event. I think a lot of people love coming up here on the wine train event. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about what happens on the wine train, the trip from Cedar Park all the way over here to Burnet?
Yeah, absolutely, because that is a part of our ability to pull off the logistical challenge of how do we support a tasting on board, which was our proposition. Let's do a regular five-wine tasting, which we change up with each train.
Okay.
And since it's usually new people coming to see us for the first time rather than the same riders over and over, we create a different curated list of five wines. And we figured it out that we could do a five-wine tasting in a two-hour period from Cedar Park to here. So on the day of the event today, we marshal everybody together here at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then we drive to Cedar Park with the wine glasses, the wines, and a menu for them to follow along, like a tasting sheet. When they do the 2 hours here, our staff rides the train with them, doing the tasting in each car, and we coordinate that with Austin Steam Train in terms of the number of riders. We're pretty well maxed out at about 125. And that 125 number is how many people we can fit into this facility comfortably.
Okay.
In case it's windy, raining, snowing, too hot, or whatever.
Yes, sir.
And if it's not, then we have gorgeous outside seating that spreads everybody out. But we still limit it to 125 based on that. And it's been remarkably successful last year and then again this year. For the months that they operate, they don't operate during the heat months.
Okay.
Which is June, July, August. But those other months, another 9 months, we're operating about two trains a month on Sundays only. Mm-hmm. And that's the that's become the wine train, the Wedding Oak Wine Train.
Is there a reason why the hotter months we're not operating the train during that time?
Yeah, the heat is too intense.
Okay.
For these vintage cars. Not the diesel locomotive that pulls them, but the vintage cars, the air conditioning systems aren't powerful enough to idle while they're in Cedar Park boarding for the 2 hour ride here and then for the 2 hours they're here, sit there idling and take the trip back. That 8 hour period, compressors can't hold up.
Okay, yes,
so
sir.
The trains become basically insufferable in terms of the heat. So they just don't operate in those months. That's probably a lot of in the weeds, but that
no,
kind of gives
perfect.
You the reason why we don't do it in those 3 months.
Yes, sir. So when the guests arrive here at Wedding Oak, what are some options do they have in terms of food or bottle service or by the glass service that you offer when they arrive here at the location?
Right. So what we've done is because we've done a tasting on board the train, they have an idea of those five wines, which ones they like. We then make available all the other wines we have without tasting for them to purchase if they choose so. And most of them do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a bottle of wine usually here on premise. And whatever's left, if there's still some left, they cork it and can take it back, right?
Right.
They just can't partake. They can't drink the wine on the trip back.
Okay.
They have to hold it for them until they arrive there in Cedar Park. But that notwithstanding, people buy bottles, share those bottles, and we don't do wine by the glass just because of the simple logistics of trying to process 125 people when they initially get here.
Okay.
And you experience that today. When you first get here, there's a line. So we have to process them quickly. So we don't do any wine by the glass, but wine by the bottle and, of course, anything left they can take with. And then on food, we've come up with a limited menu because, again, we're processing it quickly.
Yes, sir.
And since we're not a restaurant with pure food service, we don't have the capabilities of doing orders to go, right?
Right.
So we provide a wonderful box lunch and then also a charcuterie box.
Great.
And we're looking at adding some additional line items to that, but basically whatever we prepare that day is what we end up using, right?
Right.
So we don't have any carryover. So that's it. It's a limited food offering, but it is food.
You know, Wedding Oak has come up a couple times around here in the Texas wine scene throughout the state with a lot of the big wine competitions. You guys have won numerous awards throughout the state and in other states with some of the bigger, you know, wine competitions. Can you talk just a little bit about some of the awards that Wedding Oak Winery has won here, here just in the recent past?
Yeah, well, I could, you know, we have a lot of awards and a lot of medals. We enter about four to five competitions a year: San Francisco International, San Francisco Chronicle, Lone Star Wine Competition in Grapevine, Houston Rodeo, and San Antonio Rodeo. That's pretty much the five that we have focused on. And in doing so, we've won a lot of awards for best of class, best of category.
Yes.
Most recently, our Chiraldigo got a best of category, and different competitions. And the one today that you're featuring, the Castanet Rosé, is probably one of our more celebrated wines. We also have a Roussanne from 2019 that it scored a lot of awards at all five of those competitions, including top Texas wine and so on. So I didn't bring a list up of that.
Yes, sir.
And I don't want people to think that it's all about the medals.
I understand.
It really isn't. It's really about what the customer enjoys. Do they enjoy our 100% Texas-grown wine, and do they want that to be part of it, and to understand that sometimes others like our wine, too, and they vote on that and they judge it. But the most important voting is what people are willing to spend to enjoy our wine and then tell others about it. So I'd say we have a wide portfolio of dry wines and even some sweeter wines that have been highly recognized.
You know, I've talked to some other winemakers and winery owners across the state, and Chiraldigo has come up numerous times. Mm-hmm. It's not one of those grapes that we hear about very often, but it seems like it's gaining a little bit of traction. Can you talk a little bit about Chiraldigo and how you found that grape and what does it do that you guys really like that is starting to get some attention?
Right. Well, over time, you know, we started off like many wineries where it was Tempranillo and our case Viognier. And so we had sort of a lineup in the beginning that we were going with. But over time, we really migrated toward the Italian varietals, some of the Portuguese varietals, and certainly Spanish and Southern French, the Rhones. So, but in this particular case, Chiraldigo had always been on our wish list.
Okay.
Because we liked what we tasted at other places, not necessarily in Texas, but when we were traveling.
Sure.
So when we had a grower in the plains, in the high plains, who was growing it, we were able to get it, and we were able to make a wine for that year. And then we don't get it every year, but it doesn't always make in the quantities we need.
Okay.
But whenever we get it, we certainly want to feature it, and this is no exception. We had one last year, that 2 years ago, that's just now getting a lot of recognition, and then we have one we're just getting ready to bottle in April. So it's not an every vintage wine.
Okay.
But when we get it, it's a beautiful wine.
Awesome. Where can our listeners find your wines? How can they get their hands on some of these fantastic award-winning Texas-grown wines?
Sure, absolutely. So and visit one of our three locations, right?
Yes, sir.
So we are a direct-to-consumer model. We don't have anything in distribution. We're self-distributed. So we have a few retail outlets, but 98% of our business is direct-to-consumer, either as a wine club member or just having the wine shipped or purchased. But also, when they come to visit the three locations, we have a pretty robust flight tasting menu right now. We're back up to four flights, so give everybody a good choice, something to pick from.
Okay.
Taste through what they have and then see what they like and want to purchase. But that's where most of our purchasing is.
Fantastic. Well, sir, thank you very much for joining us here on the Texas Wine Scene, taking a few minutes out of your busy time here.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Well, Mike, you've always done a great job, and we appreciate the contributions you've made to our to the media and to getting the word out about Texas wines.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Texas Wine Scene Podcast. We were here at the Wedding Oak Wine Train event this afternoon, which was a fantastic event. Got a chance to talk to Mr. Mike McHenry about all things Wedding Oak Winery. And now we're going to turn over to Mr. John Phelan, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the train itself and the history about our transportation here from Cedar Park all the way over to Burnet, Texas. Good afternoon, sir.
Afternoon.
Could you tell us a little bit about the history of this train and how maybe you acquired it? And tell us a little bit about your involvement with Wedding Oak Winery and the wine train event.
Okay. Well, first of all, the Hill Country Flyer train, it's made up of several cars. Everyone has its own history. They're all from different railroads. And so we've renumbered them. We try to restore the car back to its original configuration, and it has the look and feel as it did back in the day.
Okay.
The car numbers are all the original car numbers. So we'll start with the coaches, the New Braunfels, the Gulf Coast Historical Society restored that car. It was used on the Texas Special that ran from San Antonio through Austin onto Dallas and St. Louis or Kansas City, depending on the season.
Wow.
Okay, the next car is the Buckeye Lake. That was originally a Lackawanna coach and used on the Lackawanna, the train like the Phoebe Snow from New York through Buffalo and taking a southern route to Chicago through Cincinnati.
Okay.
Okay, the next car is the Buckeye Trail, and it was originally the New York, Chicago, and St. Louis Railroad, also known as the Nickel Plate. The Nickel Plate was their nickname, but they used that as their corporate identity throughout their career.
Okay.
The Nickel Plate ran from Chicago through Cleveland to Buffalo and connected with the Lackawanna in Buffalo to service to Hoboken, New Jersey.
Wow.
And just side note that I grew up in Cleveland, and I rode the Nickel Plate a lot, so I've ridden in that car as a passenger.
Wow.
Back in the day.
So you've been around trains for quite some time,
I suppose. Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, then we go on to the Silver Pine. That car was used on the California Zephyr, trained from Chicago through Denver, Salt Lake City, and San Francisco. It was mainly a sightseeing train. I say it's like one of the first tourist trains. But it was designed to run in the daylight in the scenic areas, Rocky Mountains and California. So that was a fun car. I helped with the restoration on it.
Okay.
And then we go to the concession car. That's was a Santa Fe coach used on the San Diego line, Los Angeles, San Diego. And when we got it, it had been cleaned out, but it was primed to use as a concession car.
Okay.
Okay. The next car is the Maurice Beckham. It's also a Santa Fe lounge car. It was used on the Santa Fe Super Chief. It was the premier passenger train from Chicago to Los Angeles, and it was all first class at extra fare. So it was a big deal to be on the Super Chief.
Wow.
And,
now, are all these cars, are they built in different years, or did all the cars come online at about the same time, and then you guys just brought them together to make one long train? How
does
that work?
Really, after World War II, there was a car building frenzy that the railroads had worn out their passenger equipment during the war for troop trains and what have you, and it was time to re-equip. So the cars really from like 48 through early 50s were that's their build dates.
Okay. The cars that we're on now, the year of build is approximately, what would you say?
It's in the late 40s, early 50s, like the New Braunfels car. That's 1956. That's the newest car.
Okay.
And the car we're riding in right now, the Nambe, it was built in 37.
Okay. And I didn't realize that different, coaches were built for different things. I guess as a kid, I just thought the trains were kind of put together all the same, and then you just kind of turned them into whatever, coach you needed them to be. But they're specifically built to be a certain thing. Is that correct?
That's correct. Every railroad had their own preferences. And, for example, the Nickel Plate coach has a curly cue in the middle because the Nickel Plate didn't like the bowling alley effect of a coach. They said it's, you know, too long, it's boring. Let's drag it up. And so they put the water fountain and timetable rack and stuff in the middle of the car. Mm-hmm. And it was nice because it wasn't as loud. It, you know, it separated the crowd.
Okay. Now, this particular train that we're on, how many coaches are on this train?
We have 9 cars on the train.
Cars on the train. And does it do this trip from Cedar Park to Burnet quite often? Or how does the logistics work with the wine train going from Cedar Park to Burnet?
We try to run every weekend to Burnet. In the summertime, we run to Bertram because it's really too hot to be in Burnet for 2 hours.
I see.
But the wine train is a special train we run on Sundays, and it's for the Wedding Oak Winery, specifically for them. We go Cedar Park to Burnet. On the way up is wine tasting that they, I think, serve 5 wines on the way up. And then when we get to Burnet, they go to the winery. They have a light meal and more wine tasting. And, of course, you can purchase wine to bring back. And the concierge will bring your wine back to the train. So it all works out very nice. We're very pleased to have them as part of the train.
Okay. So could you tell me a little bit about train restorations? I know you mentioned, your wife was the interior decorator of the coach that we were in. But when the train or a coach needs restoration, is it idle for several years and all of a sudden it needs to be brought back up to code? Could you talk a little bit about what that looks like and how that all works?
Right. It just depends on the car. That, for example, the Silver Pine, it was in St. Louis. There was a gentleman that thought he could restore it, and he soon learned that if you want to make a small fortune, start with a large fortune and get a rail car.
Okay.
But he was in a bind. And we met with him and told him about our ASTA organization. And he says, well, you know, I'll make you a good deal if you promise to restore it, because that's really what I wanted. And I said, okay, we'll do it.
Yes,
and
sir.
So we arranged to have it brought back to Cedar Park. It took us probably a couple of years. He had a good start. He had the seats all recovered, but it needed new air conditioning heating system, new electrical components. And so we did all that and brought it back to life.
In terms of restoration, does anything have to happen to the, I don't know, do you call them wheels or the, the actual transportation system of the car? Does anything need to be done to that? Or is it just pretty much all interior and aesthetic in terms of restoration?
Well, the running gear is a key part of the car. And, of course, that all has to meet FRA standards and the railroad standards.
Okay.
And, like, for the Club 41, we actually put new wheel sets under it, new trucks, the whole business. They're called outside swing hanger trucks.
Okay.
And that's the Cadillac of trucks.
Oh, nice.
But, we were able to get those, and we put those under the cars. The ones that were under there were well-worn and really were at their end of life.
Okay. So in terms of it coming from St. Louis, is that correct? It was transported?
Right. Now, the Silver Pine came from St. Louis.
Okay.
Now, it had decent wheel sets and assemblies, so the railroad comes out and inspects it, makes sure that it's going to run okay on their railroad.
I see.
And they did that and brought it back to Cedar Park.
Okay. So a train can't go on the track in terms of, like, if it's just being transported, let's say from St. Louis to Austin, Texas, it can't just be just kind of towed home. It has to be a functional train in terms of the wheel structure. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, so wheel structure's braking. They test all that and make sure that it's going to perform as it should. Now, they don't care about the interior, anything like that. They just want the brakes to work, the wheels to work. The wheels all have to be in dimension. There's a criteria for wheels. You have to measure the thickness, the flanges, and everything to make sure they comply.
Yes.
And if everything's good, then they'll take it.
Okay. It seems like you have a wealth of knowledge about trains. What was it about trains, either as a kiddo or during your upbringing, that had you gravitate toward this industry and be a part of the railroad system?
Yeah, well, we traveled a lot by train. So that was really where I got started. My aunt was a telegraph operator for the nickel plate. So we she had a pass. So when we traveled, well, she had a pass on the nickel plate, so obviously we rode the nickel plate.
Yes, sir.
And we went to between Cleveland and Chicago and Peoria. Our grandparents on both sides lived in Peoria. So we did several trips, you know, between those cities. And, of course, train was the optimum travel. My dad did not like to drive.
Okay.
He'd just as soon sit in the train seat, read his paper, and take a nap.
There you go. Well, it seems like trains would have been an easy logistical route from city to city. What do you see moving forward? I know there is a lot of talk about some upcoming train systems from San Antonio to Austin and things like that. Do you see this as becoming more of a viable solution for us as we travel from these major cities via train?
Well, I think as time goes on and people become more aware that this is the way to do it, that we can't build enough highways for everybody to drive, and the airspace is there's a limited amount there, but the trains, rail space, there's more capacity there than we realize. And that's really the way to go. And it just is going to take time for people to realize that you have to make a few concessions.
That sounds great. Well, sir, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us about all things trains and here on the Texas Wine Scene. Where can our listeners get information about coming up to ride on the train or about the organization that you're a part of with the train system? Where can they find out some more information about that?
Okay, they can go to the train's website. It's austinsteamtrain.org. Go to that website, and they'll have history on the cars. They'll have the schedule of upcoming rides. You can book your tickets through the website, and everything can be taken care of through that.
That sounds fantastic. Sir, thank you once again for joining us here on the Texas Wine Scene. We really appreciate you stopping by.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.
I had a great time going to the Wedding Oak Wine Train Tasting event. If you're looking for a unique wine tasting experience and one that takes you off the beaten path, then this event's for you. But I have one critical piece of advice. You must book this event well in advance. Because of its popularity, when the dates are released for the upcoming Wine Train events, they sell out quickly. So go to their website at weddingoakwinery.com and subscribe to their newsletter to be notified of upcoming release dates for this event. You won't be disappointed. Well, that would do it for this week's episode. I'm Mike Cole, your Texas Wine Scene correspondent, and I look forward to seeing you next time on the Texas Wine Scene.